SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Hour two on this Friday, the weekend preview, Labor Day weekend, and of course Monday. We'll save a lot of conversation about those cards nationwide, including actually what the Greenwood, and the other race at Philadelphia Turf Amazon on Monday. Anyway, there's lots of action on Monday, and a lot of times we get Nick back for holiday Mondays, but right now we'll focus on huge Saturday action at Saratoga. And I sent out the overnight the other day with the stakes action, and I said, not done yet, a 14-horse field in the Woodward. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Quick recap from Travers' thoughts and the way last weekend unfolded.
You know, it was this new Travers card, I guess, that we've had for the last few years is always going to be really incredible in many different ways, just because of the sheer number of quality horses that are going to run, the grade ones that all happen in succession. And they certainly, I think they lived up to the billing without question. Some were even probably better than what the billing had been, including that Abel Tasman Elite Showdown. Hoping that's not the last time those two lock horns this year. I know there was a little chatter afterwards about late maybe trying the classic, but I'd rather cooler heads prevail and she end up in the distaff and face off against Abel Tasman again, because that really was just a stirring addition of the personal ensign, to wax poetic a bit in Steve Bick fashion. But it was very, very good. Nice to see Whitmore get his grade one. Certainly a horse that had knocked on the door multiple times in the past. Was a little bit disappointed with the race that City of Light ran. I think that it was a matter of maybe him being a little overconfidently ridden. It was a little odd that he didn't change leads down the stretch as well. You know, it sounds like a little bit of a goofy angle, but I would encourage anybody during that stretch that Irad Ortiz had where he lost over 30 races in a row, I'm going to make note of a lot of those horses that he rode, because it just felt like a little bit of a slump during a pressure cooker of a meet where he might have been overthinking a couple of things and maybe making some decisions that weren't ideal. If you noticed on a daily basis, he was burying a lot of horses inside, which really obviously on the dirt is not nearly as important as it is on the turf. And I know his main client, Chad Brown, certainly wants a lot of his horses ridden that way. That's not really the optimal approach on the dirt. So that's just a bit of an aside. But otherwise it was Marley's Freedom's performance was arguably, outside of Abel Tasman, the best of the day. To be parked out there 3-4 wide the whole way and win going away. The improvement that she has shown, and I don't know what her sheet figure was, but looking at her thoroughgraph pattern going into that race, the improvement that she showed once she got to Bob Baffert's barn is incredible. And it feels like she probably ran much faster than she had at any point going into that. So it was it was a fun day, and no doubt it didn't disappoint. And I can't forget Promises Fulfilled, who, you know, I know that his buyer figure may not have been as high as it had been in his prior race, but boy, I mean, talk about a horse that is just willing to take on all comers and lay down his fractions, and if you want to duel with him, you can duel with him, but he's more likely to survive than you are. So he seems like a really fun prospect for the Breeders' Cup Sprint, and I'll be interested to see where Dale Romans wants to prep him, if he does, prior to it, imagining it'll either be at Belmont or Keeneland. I suppose he could run in the Gallant Bob, too, but so that could happen. But either way, I think that, and I'm hopeful he goes to the sprint. I know there are people out there who think that the dirt mile is a possibility, but I still like his chances at 6 furlongs, especially because, you know, outside of maybe a few of the horses in California and Imperial Hint, you're not dealing with a ton, and he's quicker to the punch in the opening quarter mile than a lot of those horses. So I like his chances at his trainer's home base in November.
Now, a lot to glean out of this meet, and we'll do some of that between now and into the next round of big stakes and see not just the big stakes, but, you know, there'll be any number of maiden races at Belmont and elsewhere because the Kentucky contingent, they'll head back toward Keeneland and Churchill and Kentucky Downs and so forth. There's even, as I mentioned earlier, some horses that have gotten down already to Gulfstream, including Coast. I don't know if you saw this. Coast was sent down. It's going to be in a maiden race at Gulfstream tomorrow. So keep close tabs. This is the way to make money, and to, you know, if you struggled at proportions of Saratoga and you want to recoup, use what you saw here and use it to your advantage. And trips and some, you know, we've talked about some portions of the meet where there were absolute distinct advantages to be on certain parts of the track. You got to work at it and go through charts and go through your notes, and you've already done a lot of the work that will reward you here over the next 30 to 60 days. So there's my little
your primer
treatise. Yes. Let's turn to Saturday, Nick, because this is really a treat. You get to the end of the meet, and you know certain radio pundits said that, you know, the meet was the worst ever, and horses were waiting for now to go to Kentucky Downs. This card kind of flies in the face of the corpulent stupidity.
Well, perhaps it had been on a day. He said that on a day where he actually fell asleep on air, because we know that's happened a time or two in the past. But yeah, that was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever read. And I think this card will certainly silence anyone that thinks that it's not going to be a big finish. Because I was driving from Austin to Houston on Wednesday, and I was talking to Travis Stone on the phone, and he said, "Hey, have you seen the overnight for Saturday?" And I said, "No." And he said, "There are 14 in the Woodward and 12 in the Spinaway." And I started laughing, and I was like, "Okay, hilarious." And he's like, no, I'm serious. There's 14 in the Woodward and 12 in the Spinaway." So, and not to demean anybody who works in the racing office, but we just haven't really seen this happen. And I think a lot of course, the Woodward field has to do with the fact that not only does a division really lack a clear standout, I feel like we're saying that very often, and we're underrating Diversify and Accelerate because maybe they don't have maybe they've lost in too many big objectives for us to believe that they're really at a certain level. But this division, and especially in Diversify's absence, lacks a horse that you can really point to and say, okay, you know, there's the one that everybody is going to be fearful of, and that horse just doesn't exist in this Woodward. So it brought together a very eclectic group, and I think that one of the funniest things you can do is look at where a lot of these horses are coming from, what kind of races they're coming out of. I mean, you have them from Mountaineer, from Albuquerque, from Gulfstream, from restricted stakes races, from allowance races, really from Indiana Downs, from all over. And I think the one thing that you sort of get when you actually try and handicap the race is that whatever pace there is really all drawn towards the outside. So it's a question of how much some of those horses are going to be ridden to be forwardly placed. And I think one of the horses that sort of holds the keys to that is Leo Frick, who really isn't very fast, but he's drawn in the 11, and he has Kendrick Carmouche. So, I mean, you can kind of imagine that Brad Cox's plan is for this horse to be on the lead. And I know he set a relatively slow pace at Mountaineer last time, but still, that was obviously the best approach in order for him to get the job done that day, and it feels like it's going to be the best approach for him to do it tomorrow. How much pressure he gets early from horses like Sunny Ridge, Zanotti, and Rally Cry, you know, they're not speed horses. So, I mean, he could certainly get some token pressure in the first couple of furlongs if they do ask him to show speed, as I'm expecting. And really, then the question becomes, who does that set the table for? Gunavera's comeback race was slow, but we know he's a horse that's run really well at Saratoga. He's a horse that has a great bit of ability, and if anything, he should move forward second off the layoff. He's also, as he's gotten older, developed into a horse that probably doesn't have to be quite as far off the pace as he was before, especially early in his three-year-old season, and that will undoubtedly make a big difference. The two horses that are both going to get bet that I'm really on the fence on in terms of how to approach them are Tappert and Yoshida. There's going to be a great amount of Yoshida support simply because of the quality running lines, and everybody and their dog is going to talk about how his dam Hilda's Passion won the Ballerina and was obviously a very, very high-quality dirt horse in her day. When horses like this, and granted, Bill Mott might be the exception because I've never really seen anybody change surfaces with horses that have this much form and get the desired result. When horses like this are sent to the turf immediately, it's usually because they can't run on the dirt. I'm going to be very interested to see how this horse runs. I cannot take him at 5 or 6 to 1 like he is on the morning line, and I'm going to have to assume that this is an attempt on their part to see if he can do it, because he's probably not a high enough caliber to be a Breeders' Cup mile horse. He can't go a mile and a half, and they're just sort of stuck in a spot. Now, Tappert was ridden forwardly in the Whitney, and that was a mistake because he's never going to be able to keep up with a horse like Diversify, so that hot early pace completely scorched him, and he spun his wheels late. I want to give him the excuse of a wet track, but he's also never run well at Saratoga. So there's a little bit of concern there. I think he's going to run better. I think he's one of those sort of one-paced horses that can be within range early in a slow-paced race and start grinding them down. So I'm going to use him prominently. I think I guess if I was publicly making a top pick, I would pick him, even though I still have many concerns. But again, with this field, I think you're going to have concerns about whoever you land on. It's going to be a question of finding out who you think offers enough value and giving them a try.
It's a fun and compelling field. And when building, those of you that are superfecta bettors, best of luck. Because I don't know. I mean, other than, you know, finding horses that are going to clunk up for third and fourth, I don't know what you do. I don't know who you cross off here that can't get a share. That's the, I mean, this whole field is separated by what? 3 lengths?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, would it surprise you at all if you throw a blanket over them at the finish and, you know, and 6 horses are within a couple, 2-3 lengths? It wouldn't really to me at all. I don't see who could jump forward with a compelling performance and really spread this bunch out, because they're just not, there's just really nobody in here of that quality. And you know, honestly, even though you have a grade one winner, you have a grade one turf winner, you have a grade one dirt winner in the field, you have a couple of grade one dirt winners, it's sort of a really fun bad group, you know. So it's, and it's not to take anything away from them, but there's really nobody in there who you can latch onto. So hopefully somebody does step forward and we see maybe a Jockey Club Gold Cup candidate and ultimately a Breeders' Cup Classic candidate. Knowing a horse like Seeking the Soul has run as well as he has at Churchill and got really good at the end of last year, hopefully Dallas Stewart gets him back to that kind of form. He looks like a very, very dangerous horse to me. He's a little bit, could potentially be a little bit compromised by the pace, but he's overcome some negative setups in the past. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's now back in form. Obviously, he's going to have to be better than he was at Indiana Downs. And if he is, then he can win, and he can be an interesting horse moving forward.
Well, if we're going in that kind of direction, he's 9-2. Term of Art is 30-1. And this is a horse I've liked from day one when he was with Doug O'Neill. Brad Cox has had him now for a period. This is third off the layoff. And from a fig standpoint alone, he absolutely fits. And he picks up Junior Alvarado, who really could suit him. And he should set up shop, I would think, mid-pack. And he's a horse that can finish. And I'm absolutely betting Term of Art. That I know. I mean, before I do any final work, he's on tickets for me. I've believed in this horse as a 3-year-old, and I'm not going to miss an opportunity to bet him in this setting.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, I think this is the kind of race where you should be looking for interesting prices, whether it's to fill in the exotics or to potentially spice up a multi-race play. You know, it doesn't seem like the kind of race where you're supposed to be on anybody who's too short a price, and that depends on how you assess value. There might be people out there who look at Seeking the Soul and they say, hey, 9-2 is value on him. But either way, I think you want to take somebody that really fits what you think in terms of how the race is going to unfold and offers you a decent price, because I mean, I don't imagine favoritism here. I think David Aragona's got it absolutely right. I think Gunavera ultimately ends up the favorite, and I'd be very surprised if he's less than 7-2, barring multiple scratches.
Sonny Ridge.
Sonny Ridge is going to get that with a 102 fig and Jason Service on his side. I mean, I think the worries obviously are the post and the fact that every time he's been in a grade at stake, he's sort of stubbed his toe. But this is a barn. I think that as soon as you start to discount, you'll end up with empty pockets.
Exactly. Let's look backwards at the Spinaway. And, of course, I mentioned earlier Saranac, Spinaway, Woodward on NBC Sports Network tomorrow. So you can look forward to that, 5:30 to 7. The Spinaway group of 12 fillies. And there are three distinct headliners in Catherine the Great, Chasing Yesterday, and Restless Rider. And then there's, you know, a handful of nice fillies that are going to have to elevate their game.
Yeah, that's pretty much sums it up. It's a really kind of a showdown of those three primarily. I do think that Chasing Yesterday is going to go off. I wouldn't say a relatively solid favorite here, but there's a lot of fanfare given her pedigree being a half to American Pharoah, and obviously Mike Smith and Bob Baffert just happened to be 13 for their last 15 in New York together. So it was actually made for a fun little trivia session, a bunch of among the nerds that I was congregated with on Sunday morning, trying to figure out who the lone off the board finish was. They have 15 starters together in the last 5 years in New York, 13 wins, 0 seconds, 1/3, 1 off the board finish, and it happened to be Big Gray Rocket in the Champagne a couple of years ago. So that aside, Chasing Yesterday, I was actually at Del Mar when she debuted. She was extremely impressive. I think certainly ran to the billing. Honey from the South, who finished second, was subsequently privately purchased by Phoenix Thoroughbreds, moved to Bob Baffert, and came back and missed by a nose at 1-2 last week. So, and actually improved her buyer figure by 7 points. So it would seem at this point as if Chasing Yesterday's figure was validated. And, you know, with the early speed that she has and probably the ability to set up shop right outside Catherine the Great, I would imagine she'll find herself getting what should be a pretty good trip. I know Catherine the Great was a pretty compelling winner of that Schuylerville. However, I don't think it would be prudent to totally discount Nona Madeline, who didn't get out of the gate particularly well. Second straight start where she didn't get out of the gate well. Stop me if you've heard that before when it comes to a Todd Pletcher horse at this meet, especially a two-year-old, and really ran well to kind of recover from that and get up into the mix and then ultimately get shuffled out a little bit before making a run for second. So I'm not going to be surprised if Nona Madeline runs an improved race. I actually would like to see them let her totally drop out and make one run, given that it feels like she's a horse who really benefit from every bit of the 7/8, if not more. And look, we've seen this race, especially with a lot of these horses stretching out for the first time, we've seen this race get a little hungry in the final furlong, and that's where a horse like Nona Madeline might just be moving in the right direction. Because as you look through this field, you're finding plenty of speed between Chasing Yesterday and Catherine the Great, Sipican Harbor. They all should be showing some amount of speed. Now, with all that said, if you've never seen Restless Riders last race in the debutante, you'll have to search the internet to find a replay of it. Go to churchilldowns.com, watch a replay of this race. It was incredible. I mean, she didn't beat much that day, but it doesn't matter. The trouble that she got into around the turn, and then to absolutely inhale that field and sprint away the way she did, it was a very, very impressive performance from a second-time starting two-year-old. So this is a horse with a lot of quality. Kenny McPeak has quietly had a really nice meet, and I'm expecting her to give a really good account of herself. And like I was sort of just alluding to, I think horses that are going to be making moves from off the pace are the ones that you really want to upgrade in this field.
Let's talk about the two turf races. The Saranac comes before the Spinaway. Three-year-old boys, and some that we're familiar with, and then a few kind of new faces that come into town. Then there's one that we're familiar with and is a new face on the grass, Free Drop Billy.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of us that have been hopeful that Free Drop Billy would get to the turf eventually, so it's kind of exciting to see him there. I mean, I don't know. Look, I've always been in the camp that Free Drop Billy actually just needs to be cut back. I think he's a one-turn horse, which was hard to believe given that he's by a Belmont winner and he's out of a dam who produced a 12-furlong Group 1 turf winner. So, but it just, you know, as they as he progressed through the Triple Crown Trail and then the couple of Triple Crown races that he ran in, it just seemed as if he was totally maxed out distance-wise. Clearly, there's turf pedigree there. On the dam side, as I alluded to, he's a half to Hawkbill, who won the Dubai, one of the races in Dubai this year, the one that's a mile and a half. So you would expect him to improve moving to the turf. That being said, he caught a pretty salty group. This is by no means a weak group of horses. Raging Bull is a very, very solid three-year-old. He got a good pace set up last time, got a bad pace set up the time before that, so he's a horse that is going to be somewhat dependent on how quickly they go early. That's obviously not something that Free Drop Billy is going to contribute to, but it feels like there's decent pace in here other than Up the Ante, who is the one to catch from the inside. I guess you're hopeful, if you're taking it off the pace horse, that Sand Dancer pushes the issue a little bit, maybe even Hot Springs and or Golden Brown, both of whom do have a good bit of early speed. You're going to need something to set up a horse like Raging Bull, who, look, as far as this barn goes and the way everybody just gets bet like it's a one-horse race from Chad Brown's barn, you're going to get no value on Raging Bull. So you probably want to shop around as much as you possibly can. I thought that there was still a case to be made for Therapist. I think a mile and an eighth might be just a little farther than he wants to go, but he's a horse who really doesn't have to be that far off of it, can be within range, and that might make the difference. That might be put him in a situation where he can at least outrun his odds. So I want to try him in the multi-race plays. I'm going to use the obvious horses. I'm going to use Raging Bull. I'm going to use Up the Ante. I could be talked into March to the Arch, who has been very, very good at Woodbine. Look, honestly, though, it's very tough to trust this barn, taking a horse from Canada, bringing them to America, especially as bad as it's been. We know Mark Cassie is better than a 4% trainer, but look, Saratoga can be a house of horrors for a lot of people, and this horse has to improve a modest amount. At 10-1, I could try it in a multi-race bet.
Well, and of course, we had Stuart Simon show up the other day and win, and a horse that didn't, of course, that's a turf sprint, but still, that was a horse that I thought had a big chance, and the horses have been coming into town, Nick, from all points on the compass, and sneaking out with the money.
Well, and I hate to sound rough about it, but I think that points to the lower quality of New York racing right now. I mean, I hate to say, especially on the dirt, there have been more Parks winners, there have been more horses coming from Laurel, Monmouth, places like that have run better than they used to, and that just
Finger
has
Lakes.
To do with the fact that the dirt program has completely eroded. It's nothing but a turf festival from April on. So the Stuart Simon horse the other day, I mean, figure wise and a place like Woodbine, the turf racing is very, very strong. So that's why I would be willing to try these horses, especially from there. But, and it's two different conversations, of course, that I'm kind of lumping together. But that horse ran very, very well and had figures and performances that looked like it put him right in the thick of things, and he ran to it. So it's not as if a horse like March to the Arch is far off of the best in this field, especially with the improvement he's shown lately. And I think, again, this type of projection play is fair when you're looking at a horse that is going to be a decent price.
Let's slip in the Glens Falls, which closes out the action. All stakes pick four. Some thoughts?
Yeah, I hate to be Captain Obvious, but if Santa Monica runs anywhere near what she did in the Dance Smartly, there's no chance she'll lose this race. She was, I know, I've famous last words, and I was told last week after a Raving Beauty flopped in the Boston Spa, oh, absolutely, positively can't lose. So told him, prognostication's a tough business. So I know that well enough, but she was really, really good last time. I know that if you're a Timeform US user, there was a little bit of pace in front of her that day, but what's interesting about that race is that there were really no appreciable off-the-pace moves. Inflexibility was sort of there the entire way, and Santa Monica just ran over the top of everybody. The horses that had shown a little bit of speed otherwise were kind of cheaper, that fell apart late, and I mean, she just wheeled to the outside and rolled home. So feels like a horse that really is impervious to any kind of bad setup. And I mean, that was a performance that just is significantly better than any of her rivals in here have put forth. I'm interested to see how Lady Montour runs. I still feel like last time was the time a little bit, even though you're going to get a decent price. A lot of these horses really don't run to that North American debut, especially when it's a big step forward like it was for her. I mean, I'm gonna try and make it easy, and I'm going to end all of my multi-race plays with a single, because I feel like maybe other than a horse like Homeland Security, who might just get the jump on her, I don't know who's going to beat Santa Monica in this field.
I agree. Any other spots on the card?
It makes you feel that way when you concede a graded stake race to Chad Brown on the turf, but that's, you know, that's life right now. Because I feel the same way. But the first race is an interesting two-year-old race. There's a couple of pedigrees in there. Jimmy Jerkins has a Bernardini colt out of Cat Moves. Cat Moves won the Prioress back when it was a grade one and run at Belmont. She actually was trained by Tony Dutrow for Ned Evans. And Lion Dance looks like he's working very, very sharply. It's a pedigree that looks like you're going to get the stamina from the top side and the maybe the fleet-footed precocity from the dam side. Sugar McGahee has a colt out of Wine Princess. Wine Princess, of course, was a daughter of Azeri. This horse has one sibling who was a two-year-old debut winner. Dallas Stewart shocked just about everybody last week with the first race winner on the Travers card, and he's got what looks like another relatively quick horse, at least workout-wise. Wasn't so much so at the sale, but we've seen Dallas's winner last week was a $12,000 Louisiana bred, so it was kind of fun to see that happen, especially with all the blue bloods in place on Travers Day. We'll see if Will Dancer runs well for Chad Brown. It feels like a lot of these two-year-olds have been hit or miss. He'll certainly get some support. Looks like a good work tab. Did draw well, unlike his runner last week who had the rail in the opener. So I think any of those firsters that are taking significant action, you want to give a second look to, and you want to plan on Speed App running better. Wayne Lucas is better with second-time starters, and this is a horse who didn't really have a clean trip in his debut, took some support that day, so I would imagine he'll run quite a bit better. That looked like a fun two-year-old race, and being there at the beginning of the card obviously is no problem because you can see everything going on. I would prefer they not be buried in the middle of a sequence of any type. And then the two-year-olds going long on the turf, I guess at this point we're pretty sure that horses coming out of the CNOW and Digital Footprint race should probably just be completely discounted. So I'm expecting Spirit Animal to run well getting to the turf for Chad Brown. He was a horse that looked like he just kind of went through the motions in his debut and got at least a race behind him. So I would expect him to run a lot better. You don't want to concede these races to him, but I think when you're dealing with a horse that's gotten a little bit of experience, it does make a big difference. And we'll see, you know, if that little edge is enough to put him over the top.
Nick, obviously, can't thank you enough. Maybe we'll get back together on Monday, one of our great traditions, Monday holiday. Nick Tamaro visits with the big Labor Day racing. Best of luck. Should be a terrific way to close out Saratoga. Anything? Did you look at Sunday at all?
I did not. I took a glance. Prioress looks like a really, really good race. I would imagine we'll get a little bounce back or see pretty strong favoritism from Mia Mischief. But no, I didn't get to look too much.
All right. We'll save it for Monday then.
I'm ready Monday.
Excellent. Done. Those of you that so enjoy Nick, follow him, NTAMM, NTAMM 1215. We'll follow Nick with Tom Quigley. And, of course, Quigley hosts Nick and the boys so often at the Great Race Place. And they're getting ready to break camp, of course, at Del Mar, too. Let's step away a little past the bottom of the hour. Weekend preview, closing weekend at both Del Mar and Saratoga. Opening day at Kentucky Downs. Back after this, Tom Quigley. Still have to hear from Dave Grenick after Tom. And then Ed DeRosa, Hammer. And I think we'll probably wrap it up with a Mike Welch Clocker special back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out. Because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you're doing to me?
Back at the races, 10, well, make it 20 to the top of the hour, and we continue to preview the weekend. Tom Quigley going to join us and talk about his thoughts, the Del Mar meet, and then Hammer to follow later in hour three. So we've got a pretty good trifecta with Quigley, Privman, and Hammer. Here's Tom Quigley. Good morning.
You got the West Coast covered with that trifecta, don't you, Steve? And by the way, you mentioned the Hammer in San Anita. 4 weeks until opening day. Of course, we make a brief pit stop at Los Alamitos on the way over to Arcadia, California. But wow, as you well know, opening weekend at San Anita, always a special time with all those Breeders' Cup winning your end prep races. So great weekend here, closing weekend here where the turf meets the surf, but a lot to look forward to as we edge closer to the Breeders' Cup.
A lot of great stakes action, and the two-year-olds very much in focus as we look ahead. First, a glance at the meet from your perspective, Tom, and you know, some of the ebb and flow and some of the highlights and what you're taking away with four more cards to run.
You know, you had texted me to kind of reflect back upon the meet, and so I did that this morning. And, you know, just like life, Steve, there's a lot of highs and lows. You mentioned the two-year-olds. Without question, the two-year-olds were certainly one of the highlights of the meet here on the West Coast. Hollendorfer, Baffer, you're going to see some of their talented runners on display, not only here at Del Mar, but also back at Saratoga tomorrow in the Spinaway, specifically for Baffert with American Pharoah's half-sister. So the two-year-olds certainly have been probably one of the leading stories of the meet from a positive standpoint, and we're going to see that on display, like you mentioned, the debutante tomorrow and then in the futurity on Monday. Also, the emergence of Drayton Van Dyke. He's two up on Flavian Pratt. I don't think anybody could have anticipated that. We've seen throughout the course of the year Baffert use him on many of his talented runners, and then when they suddenly become grade one animals, Mike Smith gets them out. But make no mistake, Drayton Van Dyke, a budding superstar, and he's showing it day by day, rides with a lot of confidence, and it's good to see a young man with his head kind of screwed on straight have such success. From a From a negative standpoint, of course, the retirement of Unique Bella kind of hurt. That was a kick in the gut, kind of came unexpectedly after a workout. She was very talented, as you know. But the good news is she's obviously it wasn't a career-threatening injury, and so she's going to be, move on to become hopefully a successful broodmare, and that's certainly good news for the connections. And then, of course, the two accidents with the jockeys, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, Victor Espinoza going down and, you know, suffering a really horrible injury, as I'm sure you've seen. It's been well documented. Not sure how soon we'll see Victor back. He's certainly still going through rehab, but he is at home, which is good news. And then Corey Nakatani and that horrific spill coming down the lane in the turf course a few weeks ago. He's obviously on the mend as well, and we won't see him for a while. So two, quote-unquote, Hall of Fame caliber type jockeys had to go to the sidelines, and that's some of the negative news. But, of course, the positives always outweigh the negatives. John Sadler with Catalina Cruiser and Accelerate, probably two of the more impressive performances of the meet. So overall, long-winded, long story short, Steve, it's been a really, really fun time down here at Del Mar.
Well, let's look toward the weekend, and you can start either with the experienced horses or talk about the two-year-olds. The futurity won't be drawn until today, but we know some of the principles. The debutante, we know where the headliners are. Maybe start with the two-year-olds.
Yeah, I do want to start with the two-year-olds. It goes as race four because it's only a field of five, and saw a comment on Twitter, well, typical small field California. That was completely misguided. The field sizes here at Del Mar the entire summer have certainly been strong, and I think what you're seeing in the debutante is three of the five runners certainly are capable of winning, and I would consider them to be quote-unquote monsters. So I think the strength of the two-year-old filly division out here scared away a lot of the other trainers from wanting to compete in this race, even though it's obviously a very prestigious grade one race. But the main competition comes down to the three headliners. It specifically would be number two, Brill, number four, Mother, and number five, Balafina. I will talk about Balafina. I will start with Brill. I thought Brill, Steve, was one of the more impressive winners of the meet. It came on opening day. It looked like she was just getting warmed up. The expectations were high because they spent $1 million for her. But she came home in barely over 12 seconds, and she was just starting to get moving late. I think the 7 furlongs is going to hit her right between the eyes. Hollendorfer has been extremely patient with her. The second place finisher, Del Mar May, if you look at the Balafina running lines, if you have the past performances in front of you, you can see Del Mar May, who finished second to Brill, came back as a maiden to run second to Balafina in the Sorrento. So I think that certainly flatters Brill's form. So Brill, of the three, would be my top pick. Mother certainly did nothing wrong in her debut. You can see Van Dyke chooses Brill over Mother. The breeding on Mother is outstanding, particularly as the distances extend. She's a half-sister to 2014 Kentucky Derby runner-up Commanding Curve. She did nothing wrong in her debut. Baffert, throughout the entire meet, has had all these debut maidens hit the winner's circle. They've all been bet. In this particular case, her morning line was 8-5. She went off at 3-5, and she won certainly easy. Always difficult to discount any Baffert runners, but I do think Brill has a touch more talent. I am concerned that she's drawn inside of her other two rivals, but I do think she's the best horse. And Balafina, I don't mean to discount her. She has that gaudy 94 buyer speed figure, which as of a few weeks ago was the highest top figure for any two-year-old male or female in the country. But if you dissect her fractions coming home, she kind of staggered home. She came home in a little bit over 13 seconds. She was impressive in victory after adding first-time blinkers. She gets a good outside post with Flavian. She could improve like most two-year-olds. Maybe she will even take another step forward, but I think she might regress a little bit off of that. A really good race that I think has major implications for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies race.
Absolutely, and looking forward to it. Other maiden affairs dot the whole weekend. You got the split divisions, right? The ninth going, the ninth and the fifth? Ninth and the what? Where's there? There were two. Let me see here. Here it is. The fifth and the ninth.
59 maidens, two-year-olds going 6.5 furlongs. 11 races tomorrow. 10 races on Sunday. I know they wanted to cart 11, but ironically, we're going to have a major concert attraction here on Sunday at Del Mar. Ice Cube in performance after the races. So I think they cut the races a little bit short, ran 10 on Sunday. Like you mentioned, Steve, they draw the races for closing day Monday, which will include the futurity. I'm pretty sure they're going to cart 11 the support at the entry box has been strong, as I mentioned. So, you know, you see the typical characters in both of those in that split of the maiden division. Both days, you see Keith DeSormo, Bob Baffert with a couple. Peter Miller, who obviously is going to win the training title here, and then turning over the fifth race, same type of guys. Miller, Hollendorfer, Baffert. You know, this is the time of year, right? This is what makes it so exciting. It's kind of like being a basketball scout, which is why I like hanging out on the paddock so much. You can kind of see the development. Not every two-year-old is developed at the same point in time at this time of the year. It's kind of like a high school or college basketball player. Some are more further developed than others. It's true with these horses as well, and so they might be spent time and time again, year after year, from circuit to circuit. The brilliant two-year-olds don't always carry that form over into their three or four-year-old campaign, while others develop later. And it's just like human athletes. Some are more prepared early on in their career. Some are just more physically more developed early on in their career. So that's what makes not only handicapping the two-year-old races, but trying to project whether they'll improve or decline over time such an interesting, interesting body of work that I enjoy doing so much.
Absolutely. Well, we got some names that we already know, including Gumtree Lane Gary Young purchased for Michael House, Phil D'Amato training, and look around Baffert, Pioneer of the Nile, who's got much better, the Three Chimneys homebred, the old mayor from Padua, Dustin Diamonds, caught my eye as well. This looks like a very nice group. And then Michael Stinson, and the Stinsons were in town about 10 days ago for the unveiling of the Julie Crone bronze that Mrs. Stinson fashioned. And this is one of the first of the horses that he's bringing forward onto the track. Hollendorfer training the Malibu Moon Colt, and Stinson has gotten, you know, more or less a full throttle involvement again in the game. So, kind of rooting for him, shining through in the ninth.
It's good to see, like as you mentioned, Steve, some of the owners that support the game so aggressively. Eric Johnson, who is a hockey player for the Colorado Avalanche, has been on. Yep. On site most of the time here at Del Mar. He had a winner yesterday in race number two. Rick Pitino has been a frequent visitor here at Del Mar. It's good to see him and his support. They both joint co-own number four truck salesman in race number nine for the O'Neill Barn. And, you know, as you look through, you can see some of the more established names like JMS Stable, Samantha Siegel, a daily visitor to Del Mar and Santa Anita, Calumet Farm. So, like I said, exciting time of year on both coasts. It's unbelievable how fast the summer has gone by. It's just been remarkable, but it's been a fun time. And, you know, like I said, it's always a good time during the summer months here at these boutique meets. But then we go back to the meat and potato places like Belmont Park and San Diego, and the fun doesn't stop.
Got a Del Mar Derby thought and a maybe thought?
Yeah, let's talk about the maybe first, because I found this to be an interesting race. And specifically, When you analyze this race, you have to take a look at number seven, Cambodia, only because not only Tom Proctor once again is having a great meet with limited starters, but as you look through Cambodia's running lines, you can see that she's following the exact same pattern that she followed last year. Last year here at Del Mar, she won the yellow ribbon under Van Dyke. Then she came back to win this race on the same weekend last year. Lo and behold, what does Proctor do? He kind of, you know, ran her in a couple of very difficult grade one races. If you go back and look at some of those runners in those running lines at both Keeneland and Belmont. So he freshened her up, brought her down to Del Mar, and we know that she likes the surface because once again, she won the yellow ribbon, being very patient, brings her back here again on Saturday. She'll be the post time favorite, but this is a real interesting race because as an example, Steve, you take a look at number one, Meal Ticket. Matt Chu has been another guy that's had a very successful meet. Maybe not as many wins as he's wanted to have, but he's certainly been consistent across the board with all of the starters. And this is a real sharp filly right now. Ever since they stretched her out to two turns on the turf, she's really exceeded expectations. This is the acid test come Saturday, but she gets a good inside post. Tyler Bays jumps off to ride Cordiality, which I completely understand. Talamo yesterday had that incident at gate where they took him to the hospital, but reports are that he's okay and should be riding today. He'll get the mount on Meal Ticket. But you can make a case for a number of these. There's grade one winners like number two, Sophie P, who won the grade one Gamely at Santa Anita. She's been disappointing since then, but you're going to get a good price on a grade one winner. And the list is just endless in terms of different possibilities. So while a debutante has a relatively short field, which is why it's out of the pick six rotation, the maybe is an outstanding betting race, which most turf races are, and this one is no exception.
Well, we are looking forward to the weekend and watching as much as we can, and both the coasts, Labor Day closes out these meets. Yeah, it gets
to
be
two sets of eyes, not just two eyes,
yeah.
Right?
Oh my God, it's tough, and I was keeping pretty good pace with Del Mar until about the last 10 days. I have not been able to be as tied onto it as I had been the first 3-4 weeks. So, got to catch up a little bit, and this is the weekend actually to do it, because there's the 2 year olds are the stars of tomorrow, which we enjoy so much.
And all players obviously love playing Kentucky Downs as well. So it's going to be a busy weekend burning the midnight oil, handicapping all these races. But the full fields all over the place at all three tracks, Saratoga, Del Mar, and Kentucky Downs, will make for, I'm sure, a very enjoyable and hopefully profitable weekend for serious horse players.
Well, Tom, I appreciate obviously all the opportunities we've had to check in during the course of Del Mar. And we'll start to look back toward Santa Anita and Los Al and the fall, and we will move toward Breeders' Cup and everything that comes with that. I wish you luck on closing weekend. Thanks for all the contribution.
Thank you for the time, Steve. You do a great job, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, buddy. Tom Quigley. Quigley's Corner on Twitter. Let's take a break. Dave Grenig going to swing through, and we'll get Dave's closing weekend thoughts from the Spa. Then a little Ed DeRosa and Hammer before we're through on this weekend preview at the races. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio. If you want to hit big at Saratoga and Del Mar, ExpressBet is the only way to play. ExpressBet customers have access to free handicapping information, like wager guides for the Traverse and Pacific Classic, and expert tips from renowned handicappers like Eddie Olchik. Plus, new ExpressBet customers will receive a $500, $100, or $20 welcome bonus when they sign up today. Learn more at ExpressBet.com. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.